talking on all political subjects and taking on all callers. This is Matt Flynn Direct with your host, Matt Flynn. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down.
Welcome to Matt Flynn Direct, coming to you in Madison on Devil Radio 92.7 FM and WTTN 1580 AM. And Waukesha on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM. Statewide on Civic Media. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. No subject is off limits, and all points of view are welcome. And remember, you're not woke if you don't know history. You're not woke unless and until you know history. You're going right to the front lines of history in the making. And we're going to start with the story of the hour, the execution of the search warrant on Mar-a-Lago for classified documents, some secret documents, some top secret documents, and some the highest level top secret compartmented, which means that only a handful of people are permitted to even see them, and they must go to a secure location to see them. And they were unguarded in a storage room in Mar-a-Lago for over a year when the archives kept negotiating with Trump to return them, and he refused. 7 months ago, Trump sent back something like a dozen boxes of shredded and torn documents. That wasn't everything. In June, the Justice Department and the FBI met with Trump's lawyers. Trump came through the room, didn't engage, just breezily waved at everybody, and a Trump lawyer signed a document saying that everything had been turned over. That was false. Saying that verbally, even, much less in writing, to law enforcement is a felony. It's called obstruction. If the lawyer did it on purpose, the lawyer committed a felony. If the lawyer was told by Trump that everything had been turned over and that was false, then Trump has committed a felony. When they realized after the June meeting that Trump's people were still lying, they executed a search warrant. Search warrant was signed by a magistrate judge in Florida in the normal course. The odd thing about this was, when you have a search warrant signed, or as a lawyer like myself, who is not a prosecutor or a criminal defense lawyer, you occasionally have to have a judge sign something like a temporary restraining order, that kind of thing. So you go up to the courthouse, and the same thing is true with a search warrant. You go to the duty judge. A lot of judges in all these courtrooms are working, but they take turns being the duty judge. And the duty judge is supposed to entertain emergency signature requests like that, like search warrants and like temporary restraining orders and other things. In this case, the duty judge was gone for some reason. So Judge Reinhardt was there, and he signed it. That's what happens if the duty judge is out on the bench and hearing a trial. They can't interrupt that to sign something. Then you just go to anybody. You walk into a courtroom, look for a judge. His trial's adjourned. He's in his chambers writing an opinion, and you have him sign it or her sign it. So this Reinhardt in Florida was not even the duty judge, and it came to him just by chance. He read the affidavit, and he said, absolutely. There's probable cause to believe that there was a criminal violation of three statutes. One of them is the Espionage Act, spying and helping to the detriment of the United States, a foreign power, our enemy, and turning over to them documents that will assist them in injuring the United States. And he found there was probable cause to believe that there's evidence in Mar-a-Lago showing that. So they went, and I'm going to give you the updates right now. The Justice Department just yesterday brought a motion to continue to have the affidavit underlying the search warrant kept under seal. Now, what does that mean? When you go in for a search warrant, you don't just go walking in and shoot the breeze with the judge. You don't go, well, judge, sign this search warrant. We want to go sniffing around this guy's house. You can't do it. One reason that the revolution was fought was to put through the Fourth Amendment. The Fourth Amendment prohibits unreasonable searches and seizures, requires a warrant signed by an independent judge who has to assume, based on the warrant, based on the affidavit, has to believe in good faith that a crime was committed, that there's probable cause to believe a crime was committed. Now, at the conviction stage, you have to convince a jury beyond a reasonable doubt, but to get a search warrant, you only have to show evidence to the judge that's by what's called a preponderance of the evidence. In other words, it's more likely than not that a crime was committed. So you can't just go in and say, judge, give me a search warrant. You have to submit an affidavit. An affidavit is a signed statement under oath. Another under oath. So if somebody lies in an affidavit, that's perjury, that's false swearing, just as if they said it on the stand in a trial. This one is about 70 pages long, apparently, and it gives in detail all of the evidence, the informants, what kind of documents are there, that there's a criminal investigation going on, and one of the, that there's a major threat to U.S. security. Those affidavits are never, ever disclosed until there's an actual criminal charge against a person. And if there's never a criminal charge, they never get published. They never get exposed. But if there is a criminal charge, they get turned over to the defense lawyer. And the defense lawyer can do whatever he wants with it. And it can come in as evidence at a trial. An affidavit on its own is not evidence. It's hearsay. But a defense lawyer can use it to cross-examine an FBI agent on the stand, that kind of thing. So why did the Justice Department have to go in with a motion to keep secret, to keep under seal, S-E-A-L? In other words, it's in the judge's chambers in a manila envelope with a seal on it and the date on it, and do not open. And it's kept secure. Why they have to do that? Normally, they wouldn't have to do that. But in this case, they revealed the warrant and the inventory of what was taken. That's never normally revealed either. And the only reason it was here is Trump and all his people kept saying, show us the basis for what you did, hoping that Merrick Garland would not turn over the warrant and show why they did it. Garland did something that I think that was very wise. What he did is, he went to the court and he said, I'm not going to turn it over unless you tell me I can, but I'd like to. So please tell me I can. And the judge said to the Trump people, do you object? If Trump had objected, it would not have gotten turned over. It would not have been published. Trump was caught between a rock and a hard place, because if it's exposed, he looks very, very bad. Violation of the Espionage Act and top secret information taken from the government. But if he opposed it after he'd been calling for it, he would have looked really bad. So he said, I have no objection. What was revealed in the motion to keep the affidavit, as opposed to the search warrant and the inventory under seal, is that there's an ongoing grand jury looking at a criminal investigation and potential indictments for this conduct. And who are those indictments going to be of? Donald Trump, whoever helped him bring the documents to Mar-a-Lago. It may be that the mole, that the informant that told government what was down there and where it was, is doing it to save himself jail time. We don't know who it is yet. There's been speculation about Jared Kushner, Mark Meadows. Mick Mulvaney, Trump's former chief of staff, said that it could only be one of about six or eight people. And everybody knows who they are. Trump is reportedly very paranoid right now that people that are coming to see him, who he thought were his friends, are being wired. They have wires on them. That's what he is very concerned about. But as a result of all this, there have been stepped up physical threats against the FBI. There was a man in Pennsylvania who was just arrested, kept tweeting out, if you're in the FBI, you deserve death. You know something? Start arresting these people. This is going on all over the country, not just the FBI and this one. When law enforcement is threatened, when election officials are threatened, when health officials are threatened, the people threatening them should be arrested and sent to prison. And even if it's a short prison sentence, in this case, it should be quite a long prison sentence. You don't threaten law enforcement. The insurrectionists went up and beat up and severely injured more than 100 Capitol police officers, breaking jaws. Guy gets his eye poked out, concussions. There were deaths. That can only be stopped by very long prison sentences. Very long prison sentences. I'll tell you what, Trump is trying to make diversionary arguments in the course of taking these documents. In one of the boxes, Trump had three passports. One was expired. One was the kind of passport you and I have. And the other one was called a diplomatic passport that presidents are issued. It was in a box that was subject to the search warrant. The FBI had no need or interest in keeping those passports. All Trump had to do was to call them and say, I want them back. Is Trump a flight risk? I don't know. If he gets indicted, I think he is. Right now, he's hoping he won't be indicted. Yesterday, they just returned his passports. They said these were stuck in, these confidential classified documents. But that's the kind of thing he tries to make hay out of. He also yesterday attacked the judge, Judge Reinhardt, and the Department of Justice after the previous day taunting Merrick Garland by tweeting him and saying, the country is on fire. What can I do to help? Snicker, snicker, snicker. Well, here's how he helped. He attacked the judge. Now, when you attack a federal judges don't have security. They're very vulnerable. Trump is ginning up violence against law enforcement and the judiciary, and that's got to stop. That's got to stop, and enough's enough. And at this point, everybody's saying, well, former president, and give him some leeway. This guy, remember, is indistinguishable from Putin in his desires. So far, he's been somewhat constrained, but his continued attacks on law enforcement and the federal judiciary have to be met with a criminal charge, in my view. Going to break. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break.
You can run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Run on for a long time.
In time, you will know the true power of Devil Radio 92.7. It is your destiny.
UKRadio.com.
Welcome back to Matt Flynn Director. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. We're going right to the lines. Dick of Madison, my friend, thanks for calling. What's in your mind today, Dick?
Well, some of these people that are just in the tank for Trump, no matter what. I just watched a lady they interviewed out in Wyoming, why she's not going to vote for Liz Cheney. And she just flat out says, it comes to this situation now, they should be investigating the FBI for planting all that stuff there. But that said, maybe we could go the route we did with Noriega. Remember when we pumped in that music and drove him crazy? Why don't they just have a tape loop running in front of Mar-a-Lago going, if you plead the fifth, you're guilty of him, in his own words. And then maybe he'd crack and come out and say, hey, I'm guilty. I don't know. What would it take with these people? But this lady is absolutely adamant that the FBI planted all this stuff. How do you even talk to somebody like that, Matt?
Yeah, no, it's a good point. And, Dick, here's the deal. Not everybody is up on the news, the real news. Not everybody, whether it's conservative or liberal, even listens to talk radio or calls in. Not everybody reads a newspaper. Some people just go on these really kind of right-wing sites, and they just look at right-wing tweets. And what they don't understand, and if anybody out there is listening, don't understand, is some of this stuff is put out by Russia, China, and Iran. It's not put out even by the Republican Party in this country. And I've seen some of those interviews in Wyoming and elsewhere where people are so rock solid invested in Trump, it doesn't matter what he does. you know, you may say, well, what he, you know, for instance, I'm going to pose two questions. Over and above everything else at Mar-a-Lago, over and above everything else, who helped Trump bring those documents to Mar-a-Lago? How were they selected? And who has seen them or is going to see them? There are a lot of theories. It had to be somebody very senior, and that's why I think the mole is somebody who's hoping to avoid jail time because he helped Trump, number one. Number two, my concern is who's seen them already. Already. These were in an unsecured storage area for well over a year. And it was well known and well discussed that he'd taken documents with him. And all he had to do is obliquely, guy comes up to him, he meets with Ruskies and no one else around. He even did it in the White House. The FBI doesn't sit right next to him or the Secret Service and listen to everything that's said to him. Guy comes in and said, some of my principals are very concerned that you haven't repaid them $500 million, or some of my principals had a chance to review that tape of you in the Moscow hotel room and think, I don't know, maybe it's time to reveal it. And also, Trump does not want the Russian mafia collecting debts against him and injuring his family, even though he has Secret Service protection. And it's very easy for Trump to say, well, I don't want any of that. And in exchange, there are documents in a storage room that might be of interest to your principals. Guy thanks him. Suddenly, a delivery man shows up with a cell phone and a camera, goes in, closes the door in the storage room, photographs everything. Russian state TV, Evgeny Popov, he is the anchor. He'd be like the David Muir of ABC, you know, Evgeny Popov, except that it's Russian state TV, and everything they say and do is screened by Putin and is in Putin's service. Came out and said, we've already seen these documents. They have to do with new nuclear weapons. Now, that may not be true, but it may be true. Going back to the lines, Mark from the SAC, my friend. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind today, Mark?
Yeah, it's incredible. You know, some of the, you know, that watching Colbert last night, it was what Mike Flynn that was, that they had a little montage of him just taking the Fifth Amendment, and they, you know, and they kind of did a little screed of what he would be singing if he sang the national anthem. Just, you know, I plead the Fifth, because here's a guy who took an oath to the Constitution of the United States as a member of our service, and he simply has either lost or never has had a real concept of what that actually means to uphold the Constitution of the United States of America. And it is just it's something he should have held sacred, and apparently now there's nothing, you know, the only thing sacred to them now is Donald Trump and whatever twisted version of Christianity he supposedly represents. It is just kind of, it's sad. And there's too many people out there that they don't want to look at this stuff. And remind, you know, refresh my memory, how long ago was it we found out that the Russians were paying bounties on our servicemen in Afghanistan?
Yeah, that's a couple of years ago. Right, exactly.
And,
no, you're
and
raising...
Trump never condemned...
Yeah,
but
you're
raising
Trump
never condemned Putin
points,
for that.
Mark, and I mean, the truth of the matter is that there's something rotten in the state of Denmark. Thanks a lot for calling in. Nick of Lake Mills, my friend. Thanks for calling. What's your mind today, Nick?
Yeah, Trump just had that big golf tournament with that Saudi Arabian guy and his entourage coming over. I'm sure they visited Mar-a-Lago and used that as a guise just to get in there and photograph documents. And that's why he's hanging on to them so long until... So he had a reason for, like, well, why is the Saudi Arabian guy here? Well, he's here for the golf tournament, and his entourage is hanging around at Mar-a-Lago and photographing documents and all that. And I'll just leave it at that. That just hit me this morning. I'm like,
yeah, well, you know, remember the Saudi Arabian guy gave Jared Kushner $2 billion. $2 billion. Now, Nick, $2 billion is some serious money. We're not talking chump change. We are not talking a piggy bank. $2 billion. Why did Jared Kushner, after Trump left the White House, get $2 billion? Did Jared Kushner Is he the guy that helped Trump take the documents? Is he the guy that told the FBI and ratted on Trump to save himself jail time? Because Jared Kushner's father went to jail, you know. There's a lot to talk about here. We're going to a break. Excellent call. Thanks, Nick and Mark. Going to a break, Dick. Going to break. Lines are open. 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. Welcome back. Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. Well, there's a development in Georgia. It's important to understand the context of everything that's going on in Mar-a-Lago. It's just come out that Trump's lawyers in Georgia, remember, Georgia was one of the six so-called swing states whose collective votes, this is a their electors, the real electors, gave Biden something like a 60-vote margin among the electors. He already had a 7-million-vote margin in the popular vote. Turns out that Trump's lawyers, after the election, directed computer experts to copy sensitive data from the Georgia election system. It was part of a broad and well-organized effort to access voting equipment in multiple states, three of them in particular, Michigan and Nevada with the other two. And what they did is they sent in experts to copy this data. Now, in some cases, voting machines were turned over. Like in Colorado, you have the clerk of Mesa County, Colorado, who's been charged with a felony for publishing the passwords into the Colorado election system and also turning over access to the actual voting machines themselves. And she's fighting a felony conviction for that. In Michigan, you had people show up and say they are the Voter Protection Bureau demanding entry into the computer, the voting computers. In Michigan, they were turned down, but there was Republican pressure to let them in. What's going on here? What's going on here is they didn't like the results of the election. They're trying to cook up a fake, crooked way to say there was something wrong with it. And they have several objectives, but let me tell you what I think is the most insidious objective. The ostensible objective would be get in there, manipulate the data, and somehow say Trump won. The second one might simply be get in there and somehow put in a worm of some sort so that it screws up the election next time. Now, in Phoenix, remember, they did that fake audit. Remember the Cyber Ninja audit? And Republican-oriented judges in Arizona said, yes, you must turn over the computers to the Cyber Ninja people out of Georgia, South Carolina, who've never done one of these before, have no expertise, and then they hauled off data in unmarked trucks, I'm not kidding, to a secluded mountain area in Montana. And the Phoenix people, now their board in Phoenix is Republican, but they're honest Republican. They said, we're not going to be able to use those machines again. I mean, when you turn them over to people like that, you never know what they're going to do to them. We have to buy new ones, and they spent millions of dollars. And the Republicans in Wisconsin wanted the machines, and municipal people in Milwaukee and Dane County pointed out, we turn over the machines, we're going to have to scrap them then and buy new ones. Who's going to pay for that? And it finally died down. But this is the extent to which the Republican Party has come. Trump's lawyers directed computer experts in Georgia to copy sensitive data from the Georgia election system. This was part of a broad and well-organized effort to access voting equipment in multiple states. Multiple states. The ones that his lawyers that have surfaced recently were Michigan, Nevada, and Georgia. But you have a clerk in Colorado facing a felony conviction, and they tried in Arizona, and they tried in Wisconsin. So what do we do with all this? What do we do with all this? The real reason why they want to do it, in my opinion, is they can't, you know, possibly think that somehow everybody's just going to turn over their voting machines. They get to twist the knobs, so to speak, the figurative knobs, and, Trump won. People aren't going to buy that. But what they're doing is destroying confidence in our voting, in our democratic voting system. Because the average person is not thinking about it in this depth, and they're not thinking about it. They don't have time to think about all the ramifications, but all they hear out in the ozone is, ooh, there was something wrong with the voting machines. Or Trump said there was something wrong. There was a court fight about getting them. Something happened, something happened, something happened, something happened, something happened. When that drills into your head, and polls are already showing that people in both parties are concerned. In the Republican Party, because they've bought this right-wing propaganda, a lot of it seeded by Russia, China, and Iran, and they don't know it. But also on the Democratic side, thinking the Republicans and Trump's lawyers are going to continue to try to tamper. That's toxic. You know, the one thing that the founding fathers did and that lasted for well over 200 years is whatever the issues, and you can fight about, you know, just terrible issues. One, independence from Britain was a big issue. The other one were tariffs. Slavery, a moral issue that Abraham Lincoln stood tall on. But through it all, nobody said that the vote was tampered with. What the Republicans have injected into our political discourse now is that votes were tampered with, and it's a lie, and they know it's a lie. And as a companion meme that they're sneaking in is violence. Always oblique. Trump will say, well, maybe the Second Amendment people should take care of Hillary Clinton. Well, that judge that signed the warrant, I hope nothing happens to him. Those FBI agents are corrupt. They always have been. They're treasonous. And then you have young men, late teens, early 20s, who believe this and commit violence. They commit violence. That is what the Republican Party has done. Deliberately planting doubts about our democracy, which are false, and deliberately, obliquely threatening violence. Even Stephen Scalise, the number two Republican in the House caucus, when he was asked what he thought about the attacks on FBI agents, physical attacks and death threats, and the guy in Cincinnati that tried to get in with a gun and had to be shot, he didn't condemn it. He said, well, these were rogue agents. No FBI agent is a rogue agent. Not the ones that were obeying the orders from the Justice Department, which is to execute a search warrant signed by a federal judge. Not the FBI agents in Cincinnati who are just manning the Cincinnati office. You go into the FBI, you go to the FBI Training Academy, and you get your assignment. You can put in a wish list, but they'll send you where they need you. Guys get sent to Cincinnati. I've been to Cincinnati on business. Nice little city, very similar to Milwaukee. So what, they're rogue because they got sent to Cincinnati? How about the ones in Phoenix? An armed mob showed up outside their headquarters. Armed mob with semi-automatic weapons. Guy gets posted to Phoenix. What? So he's a rogue? It's not just that the rank and file of the Republican Party are being lured into this. It's that the Republican leadership are advocating it and fanning it. And because many of them are smoother and many of them are more TV conscious and many of them are slyer, they'll do it obliquely. And it sure is a shame that there are death threats against the FBI, but you know, there are rogue agents. It sure is a shame that the federal judge got a death threat and so did his wife and kids. But, you know, there are judges that do the wrong thing. And then they walk away smirking, and they've unleashed assassins. I don't know what it's going to take. With gerrymandering, it may not even be possible anymore. I mean, you could argue that we don't have a democracy in Wisconsin right now at the local level for legislature. We do at the state level because you can't gerrymander a whole state. And that's why we have a Democratic senator and a Democratic governor and a Republican senator who's up for re-election and we're hoping gets defeated. But the truth is, if you take a look at it, when you have a gerrymandered legislature, it doesn't matter who they put up. They could put up Lassie or Rin Tin Tin or Mr. Ed or my friend Flicka, just betraying my memory of TV going 50 years or so ago, or 60 years. Doesn't matter. They could put up a lizard, a human lizard. They could put up Cruz. They could put up anything. And they have. Take a look. When you have that level of gerrymandering, the question is, at what point do people look at this and say, no, I don't want my democracy destroyed. I don't want death threats against the FBI and federal judges. I don't want it. And I know of one instance in the last 100 years, historically, where an overwhelmingly Republican electorate nevertheless went Democratic for one election. That was in 1932. Roosevelt got elected. There was the middle of the Depression. People were desperate. And no Democrat had been voted to the U.S. Senate in generations. And they looked for a guy, and they found a guy, a lawyer in Milwaukee named F. Ryan Duffy. Said, Ryan, you've got to run for this thing. He said, what, are you kidding me? It's a suicide deal. Well, they put him up. So he went campaigning around the state figuring he'd get attacked. And suddenly people were nice to him, and he won. But that took a depression. That took people starving. That took people all over the state and all over society with no money and thinking that society was crumbling. That's what it took. Well, you can't, you don't want that. You don't want that level of desperation. But that's what it would take to break this gerrymander. So it's got to be done at the state level. It's got to be done with governors and senators. And the constant repetition of this true statement that the Republican Party is deliberately questioning and undermining our democracy, and the Republican Party is deliberately re-injecting violence and the threat of violence into politics for the first time since 1860. The other thing in Georgia, you know, there's a grand jury in Georgia, grand jury. The grand jury, the people running it just informed Rudy Giuliani that he is now a target, a criminal target. Before that, he'd been a witness. If you're subpoenaed before a grand jury, you're one of three things, a witness, a subject, or a target. A witness is, you know, okay, did you see this guy wheel a box of documents down the hall? You weren't part of it. You know, you're a witness. The subject is, well, you're not a target. You know, we're not looking at you directly, but you're sort of, you know, we've cast a wide net and you're a fish that's swimming around there somewhere. So you have some explaining to do about what you were doing in the area. And then you're a target. It's, you're the man. We have a bullseye on you. And Rudy Giuliani was just informed that they have a bullseye on him in Georgia, and he could well be indicted. What that means is that's the fake elector part of it. You know, there's the Brad Raffensperger extortion by Trump part of it and the fake elector part of it. That also means more widely, remember there are fake electors in Wisconsin and in Michigan and Arizona and Pennsylvania, and it may be that Merrick Garland is doing more under the surface than we realized to prosecute fake electors. And it may very well be that the state's attorneys general are cooperating in terms of their resources and knowledge with Garland. And I assume that that may be the case. The other thing, and they claim so far he's only a witness, is Lindsey Graham, although I think Lindsey Graham is very, very concerned. He might be a subject and might end up as a target. The judge just denied his motion to quash his subpoena so he doesn't have to testify because he's a senator. He said senators are immune from having to testify. We're too important. Now he's appealed it, trying to drag it out. Little Lindsey Graham is potentially in deep doo-doo down in Georgia. We're going to a break. The lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break.
Off to my right, I see five mounted cowboys. Off to my left, right, a dozen more. Shouting and shooting, I can't let them catch me. I have to...
WTTN 1580 AM News Talk Radio, built for the 99% is rural Wisconsin's home for Devil Radio.
Calm.
Good morning, Captain. Well, good morning to you.
Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. Well, something is happening in New York that smells to high heaven. Something is happening in New York that smells to high heaven. It was just announced that Alan Weisselberg, the chief financial officer of all of Trump's businesses and business interests, who is criminally charged with felonies, is now going to plead guilty to a sweetheart deal offered to him by Alvin Bragg, the district attorney that was just elected in November and that took a dive on Donald Trump himself. So what's going on? Alan Weisselberg was criminally charged. If he hadn't been criminally charged before Bragg came in, Bragg wouldn't have let it happen. Bragg took a dive on Trump. Two of the most experienced prosecutors in New York were working on the case, were about to criminally charge Trump. Alvin Bragg calls him in and said, I'm afraid to dismiss the charges or don't file them. I'm not sure we can win. They said, are you kidding me? This is one of the strongest cases we've ever had. Obviously, you can never be certain you're going to win, but somebody got to Alvin Bragg. Well, now he's extending this cancer to Alan Weisselberg. Alan Weisselberg's already been charged. He's already been charged. He brought a motion to dismiss in front of the judge saying that the charges should be dismissed, and the judge denied it. So you have a judge who has said it should go to a jury, and experienced prosecutors who said it should go to a jury. And Alvin Bragg realized that it would look really smelly if he just went ahead and dismissed these charges. Remember what Trump did with Mike Flynn? He'd already pled guilty twice, and the Justice Department dismissed the charges. And you know how that smelled. Well, how would it smell if Alvin Bragg dismissed the charges against Alan Weisselberg after a judge had said they're good charges? So he did the next best thing for Donald Trump. Under the terms of the agreement, and this is what's been reported, we'll see. It'll come out either today or tomorrow. Alan Weisselberg will spend only 5 months in jail. And incredibly, he has no cooperation responsibility. He doesn't have to testify against Trump. He doesn't have to do anything. That is an indication of something fraudulent happening here. You never have a criminal defendant who has tried to get a case dismissed and had a judge uphold the charges, said it should go to trial on felonies, whom you let off for 5 months, but then don't require cooperation. That is in the prosecutor's textbook 101. This is being done to protect Trump. You must understand this. Alvin Bragg is protecting Trump. Why is Alvin Bragg protecting Trump? He was one of about 8 candidates to succeed Cyrus Vance. Cyrus Vance is one of the best prosecutors in the country. But in New York right now has gotten so identity politics crazy, the guy like Cy Vance could not have been reelected simply because of his identity. Then you had eight people who called, claimed they were victims, identity politics victims, and two of them had very, very substantial prosecutor chops and would have been good prosecutors, and they didn't make it. Alvin Bragg made it, and virtually immediately told his prosecutors to stop going after Trump, even though they were about, even though the grand jury had come back and they were about to file the charges. And now Alvin Bragg is dismissing charges, in effect, against Alan Weisselberg by taking a dive, giving him 5 months, and then he'll be let out after about two-thirds of that, so two-thirds of 3.5 months. And even that, after about 30 days, they'll say he's not a risk, and they'll let him go home with a bracelet where he'll just have meals catered in from restaurants in Manhattan. There's something rotten out there. Somebody got to Alvin Bragg. He's a state prosecutor. I think that the U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York should start a criminal investigation. And wherever it leads, wherever the facts lead, convene a grand jury, subpoena all of Alvin Bragg's bank accounts, investment accounts, call Alvin Bragg in to testify about what overseas accounts he has or doesn't have, who contacted him. If Alvin Bragg refuses to answer, his only way to do that is to take the Fifth. Something's got to be done. You can't have a district attorney tell experienced prosecutors to drop everything against Trump when they're about to charge him after a grand jury and to take a dive on Alan Weisselberg. You can't have that. It stinks to high heaven. Everybody looking at this in New York knows that there's something rotten in the state of Denmark. There's a dead rat under the staircase somewhere. That dead rat has got to be exposed. Speaking of dead rats, we have two of them, at least in Wisconsin, Tom Tiffany and Scott Fitzgerald. Not F. Scott Fitzgerald, the great writer from Minnesota, who wrote The Great Gatsby. Not him. This is Scott Fitzgerald, Tom Tiffany. They have joined 16 other Republican congressmen. That's a total of 18 Republican congressmen calling for an investigation of the FBI of the execution of the search warrant at Mar-a-Lago, endangering FBI agents by this kind of rhetoric. This is headed up by Jim Jordan, Gymnasium Jim Jordan of Ohio, Gymnasium Jim G.Y.M. Jordan of Ohio, who's in line to be the next chairman of the Judiciary Committee if the Republicans take over in November. These 18 clowns, dead rats, are jeopardizing the FBI. The FBI doesn't issue warrants. It doesn't decide to go in with a warrant. The FBI is under the Justice Department. Merrick Garland decides that a warrant should be sought for. Only Merrick Garland. And unless high-profile cases, his deputies, but in this case, Merrick Garland. The FBI are the equivalent of police officers. If the police chief said, all right, officer, go to 35th and North, or go to the east side of Milwaukee or the south side of Milwaukee, go to this house and execute a search warrant, they will do it, signed by a judge. They are going after the foot soldiers to intimidate them, and Tiffany and Fitzgerald are part of this, and they're in gerrymandered districts, which is the only reason they're in Congress. Take a look at their eyes, their sneaky eyes. Consider everything they've done. I mean, Tiffany even voted against a resolution to condemn QAnon. This isn't Wisconsin anymore. This is a really cancerous growth in the Republican Party. We're going to a break. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break.